How do you prepare young men for a war that has long since become hell? How does a volunteer program work that lures recruits with money to find soldiers for the trench warfare in Ukraine? And what happens to those who sign up?
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.
Hello to a new episode of the Crisis Mode. My name is Jan Jessen. I am the political editor of the NRZ and have been a reporter for the Funke Media Group in crisis regions for many years.
Today I'm taking you to a training camp in eastern Ukraine. That's where we went, a place we can't name exactly for good reason, because these training centers or training grounds are also targets for Russian attacks. The day before we arrived at this training center in eastern Ukraine, there was an attack near Sumy on the border with Russia. Six recruits were killed. Just a few days ago, a few days before this recording, there was another attack on a training center. 12 recruits or soldiers were killed. So these training centers are indeed targets for Russian air forces. And that's why the exact name or location of this training camp can't be mentioned. It was a kind of hollow surrounded by hilly, forested terrain. They had built a training course there where these soldiers were training. It was a training ground of the 28th Brigade, which I visited multiple times before. On the day we were there, 30 young men between the ages of 18 and 24 were on site, training for their first frontline deployment. All of them were volunteers, attracted by a new recruitment program. You may know that Ukraine has massive recruitment problems. The brigades at the front are now severely understaffed. The losses are simply immense, both those who are killed or so severely injured that they can no longer fight. It's been relatively difficult for Ukraine to find volunteers, even when it comes to general mobilization. Normally, men aged 25 and older are required to serve or can be conscripted into the Ukrainian army. That's also proving difficult. Many avoid military service. The number of deserters is increasing. We discussed this in another episode of our podcast. We'll put that in the show notes. So now there are attempts to make military service more appealing, and for that, a volunteer program was launched earlier this year. Those who commit for 1 year are promised, among other things, a salary equivalent to 22,000 euros per year. Sounds low at first, but in a country where the average annual income is 5,000 euros, it's quite attractive for some young men. So the people we met at this training ground, these recruits, had all come through that program. And the question is, what does training even mean, and how can you possibly learn what's happening at the front? The reports and videos we see from the front are brutal, absolutely horrific. It's truly a bloodbath happening up there now, especially due to the immense activity of drones. The battlefield is more transparent than ever, and it's just ultra, ultra, ultra dangerous now. These young recruits had already completed 4 weeks of training and were set to take part in a very specific course that day, one meant to push them to their physical and psychological limits. One of the instructors, Mikola, an old soldier and the head of the trainers, explained what this day was about.
It's primarily about psychological training. We want to turn these men into warriors. They learn how to handle weapons, armor, and stress, and they should take these skills with them to the front lines.
What we saw there was truly training under real combat conditions, you could say. The instructors were firing live ammunition. We had to put on our protective vests and helmets on sight because bullets were literally flying around us. You could sometimes hear them whizzing by. It was like something out of an American movie, like Full Metal Jacket. The instructors shouted at the young men as they crawled through barbed wire. Shots were fired right next to them. Earth flew up from the bullet impacts. It was pretty intense. Of course, I also spoke with some of the young men there and asked what motivated them. One of them is Andriy, 21, from a region in western Ukraine. He wants to serve as a medic at the front.
They said it's your decision. You can leave whenever you want. Half of my money went to my family, the other half to friends. That was important to me.
The first payment he refers to is about 4,500 euros. They receive that immediately after signing the contract. Andriy said he gave part of it to his family and some to his friends. They were surely happy about that. Again, 4,300 euros is nearly a full year's salary in Ukraine, a huge amount of money by Ukrainian standards. By the way, even though Andriy wants to be a medic, all volunteers are placed in the infantry. If you join this program and sign up, you'll go into the infantry. You can then choose whether to be a medic, a sniper, or join a storm unit. But you're part of the infantry. And infantry is currently the most dangerous assignment. There are front sectors where more than half of those deployed don't return unharmed. They either die or are seriously injured. The situation at the front is extremely brutal. Some recruits don't even tell their parents, like a 20-year-old from the Kyiv region who didn't want to give his name. He signed up entirely on his own, without speaking to his parents. You can imagine that a mother might not be thrilled to hear that her son is going to the front, or being prepared for it. I felt torn when he told me that. I think it's something you should discuss with your family.
I didn't tell my mother I was leaving until a week later.
But these guys are adults, legally of age, and can do what they want. For many, money really is a decisive factor in choosing to join the army. They told us that openly. But it's not the only reason. Stanislav, for example, in his early 20s from the Dnipropetrovsk region, sees it as a chance too. That's also part of this program. After the year of service, if you survive, you're exempt from conscription for a long time. You're allowed to travel abroad. You get your education or university studies paid for. You receive free medical care, including dental work. It's a very attractive package, to be honest. And as Stanislav said, I want to defend my country. For some, that's also a real motivation to pick up a weapon. For Ukraine's leadership, this program is a risky balancing act. On the one hand, young men are being lured with money to replenish the exhausted, depleted brigades, which is important. As I said, there are enormous recruitment problems. There's also resistance to how recruitment officers sometimes forcefully conscript people off the streets. There have already been multiple attacks on recruitment offices, even assassination attempts against recruitment officers. There's a lot of resentment. The number of volunteers has dropped significantly. When Russia first invaded in February 2022, tens of thousands signed up to fight. Many of them are now dead or too wounded to continue. So new ways must be found to maintain the Ukrainian army's combat readiness. That's why this volunteer program was introduced. But of course, this too can cause unrest. Some soldiers already in service say, "Why are these new recruits getting such good conditions while we were conscripted, have been serving for at least 3 years, probably longer, and get worse pay without these benefits?" That causes frustration within the ranks, and it could also cause societal tension, especially if many of these 18 to 24-year-olds are killed or wounded. That could spark protests, angry mothers in the streets, so the government is walking a tightrope. How it will end, no one knows. There's a joke circulating in the camp: we're worth a million until the first grenade. Why a million? Because the salary is 1 million hryvnia, the Ukrainian currency, equivalent to those 22,000 euros. The motivations of these young recruits range from patriotic idealism to the prospect of earning a lot of money in a year and gaining benefits. For some, it's also a kind of rite of passage, something to brag about to friends.
I hardly told anyone. Maybe a friend, and he just said, "You're an idiot." It's a good opportunity. I get an education, even paid for my studies, and of course, I want to defend my country.
Many brigades are recruiting in a TikTok-style way. You see lots of billboards in Ukraine with soldiers fighting zombies or orcs, or riding cats through zombie armies. It's clearly aimed at a young audience. And maybe that's another reason why some sign up. They don't want to look like cowards. There are many factors at play. The training, in any case, is extremely tough. The guys we saw had already been training for 4 weeks and had learned a lot. As I mentioned earlier, and as you heard in the sound snippets, the training is really intense. They're fully equipped: backpack, gas mask, rifle, everything you'd carry in the field, including bulletproof vests. They're pushed through the course, a course like the ones you see in movies, with various obstacles, trench systems they have to jump into and run through, as if storming a trench held by Russians. Some of the recruits even trained with live ammunition. Then they go into bunkers filled with smoke grenades. Landmines explode, deafeningly loud. Hand grenades are thrown, all to put recruits under massive psychological stress, on top of the extreme physical exertion. The guys were absolutely exhausted by the time they reached the end of the course. That's Mykola again, the instructor who spoke earlier. He gave me a quote I found a bit borderline.
The
goal of such exercises is to unbalance the fighter. We simulate a mass enemy attack and want to see if they will complete their mission or collapse. Will they act or crawl into a hole? Today proved that we are well prepared. Everyone completed the parkour. No one dropped out.
The rhetoric is, of course, very martial in such a situation. Talk of warriors, fighters, and so on. But this ground combat we witnessed, infantry warfare, is just one part of it. Ukrainians are facing serious problems on many fronts right now. As I said, recruitment issues on one side. On the other, the Russians have been advancing steadily in recent weeks. The summer offensive has begun, particularly in Donbas, near Kostyantynivka, Kramatorsk, Slovyansk, and also in the north near Sumy, there are growing Russian attacks. At the same time, Ukraine has struck back impressively. The weekend before this podcast was recorded, there was an unprecedented attack. You've probably heard about it. Something never before seen in military history, an attack by Ukrainian intelligence on Russian airfields inside Russia, deep inside Russia, in Siberia, thousands of kilometers away. Ukrainian intelligence managed to smuggle drones into Russia, to Siberia even, and Murmansk in the far north near the Arctic. The drones were hidden in trucks, and the roofs of the trucks, parked near airfields, opened remotely to release the drones, which then attacked Russia's strategic bomber fleet. It was a truly insane operation. Maybe we'll talk more about how something like that works, and the enormous logistics behind it, in another episode. Ukraine, despite limited resources, keeps hitting back, trying new approaches to stay in the fight, and to position itself as strongly as possible in the negotiations now underway in Istanbul. At the time of this podcast recording, the second round of negotiations had just taken place, which is not exactly weak. I mean, in negotiations, it's simply important to be in a strong negotiating position to force the opponent into compromises. At the moment, the whole thing is really difficult. One has to say, the positions are very, very far apart. There's no sign that this will be resolved in the next few weeks or months, especially since the US is no longer acting as a mediator. So as I said, it's currently a bit difficult. But back to the training camp, one recruit who particularly stood out was Daniel. Daniel also looked like a very young man with a real boyish face and a bit of peach fuzz, and he was very talkative.
There are no people who aren't afraid. People who aren't afraid don't live. Do I think about what the future will hold, so, but very cautiously? Why? Because I understand that when I think about that, everyone is afraid. Anyone who isn't afraid isn't alive. I don't often think about what awaits me at the front, otherwise it would break me. Sometimes I imagine myself lying in the trench when it's raining or when we're attacked. I try to be prepared, even if I'm never 100% successful. But that's why I'm here. That's why I train.
He's from Kryvyi Rih. That's Zelensky's hometown. And his radio call sign is Historian. Soldiers always have call signs. Those aren't their real names. Everyone can choose their fighter name, their radio call sign, so to speak. And he told me he'd been interested in military history since he was a child. The death of his father left a mark on him. And when the Russians invaded Ukraine, he told his mother, "I'll join the military one day." He was 15 then. Now, as I said, he's 18. And his statements really hit you deeply.
There are no people who aren't afraid. People who aren't afraid don't live, I think. This is just a drop in the ocean. I know we have a long way to go in training to defeat those who attacked our country. This is the will to survive. We don't do this for fun. We do this to survive.
In conversation, Daniel comes across as very clear and composed, and as I said, it was really important to him to talk to us. But he also knows that the training is, of course, only the beginning. Yes, like I said, he's not someone, and he made that very clear to me, who makes quick decisions. He really prepared for this for a long time, also for what he's doing there. And he wrestled with the decision for a long time, whether he really wanted to do it. He has now decided to go through with it. I can only hope that it wasn't a decision he'll pay for with his life or his physical health or his mental health. That happens in war, of course. And like I said, I hope he makes it out clean. I hope they all make it out clean. They're just young men who, once they're done with training, they now have another 4 weeks of specialized training ahead of them. We'll go to the front and into hell. There's no other way to put it. What's currently happening at the front is hell. All the reports you see, all the reports you hear, also from soldiers, say that it's just absolutely brutal. And on my last trip, I spoke with someone who told me he was deployed at the front section between Kostyantynivka and Pokrovsk in eastern Ukraine, in the southeast. He said that nowadays, when you go all the way up to the zero line, that's the very front line, in the provisional holes you have to dig yourself, Russian drones can drop up to 150 drone grenades into holes where two soldiers are lying. It's just complete madness. What must be going on up there right now? It must really, really be insane. And in that sense, these young people are being sent into hell. And that's maybe something they can't really prepare for, no matter how good the training is. That's how the war continues, now in its fourth year. For almost 3.5 years, Russia has been waging war against Ukraine. For almost 3.5 years, Russia has been bombing Ukrainian cities and critical infrastructure. And for almost 3.5 years, young people have been dying at the front for a war that Putin started, and that hopefully will be resolved at the negotiating table. Whether and when that will happen is the big question. Maybe Stanislav, Daniel, and Andriy will be lucky. Maybe this war will end quickly and they won't have to complete a whole year and fight. But the outlook, as I already said, is difficult at the diplomatic level. The war simply continues without pause. Russia has so far rejected offers or calls for a ceasefire, and ceasefires that had been declared have been consistently broken. Civilians are dying again and again, for example, in attacks on the Zaporizhia region and elsewhere. Children among them. Moscow also speaks of Ukrainian strikes. Ukraine has been hitting targets more often now in the Russian hinterland. These attacks on airports are being talked about a lot right now. But there are also repeated sabotage operations. Bridges are being blown up, inside Russia itself. So the war is spreading rather than being contained. The hope for peace is currently, in any case, not particularly strong. This podcast was produced by Alexander Baumeister, also a journalist at a radio station within the Funke Media Group. You can find all episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. If you want to follow us, feel free. We're happy to answer your questions or feedback. New episodes come out every second Wednesday. And we also produce special episodes on current events. Those who know us already know that. If you don't want to miss these specials, subscribe. That way, you'll always be informed when we put something new out. Thanks for listening. Stay with us, recommend us to others, and stay safe. Take care. All the best.
In Crisis Mode, the podcast from Conflict Zones with Jan Jessen.